vada mia, il catalogo è questo, delle belle che vuoi parlo mio, un catalogo lieto fa Dio, osservate, leggete con me, osservate, leggete con me. In Italia 640, in Germania 231, 100 in Francia, in Turchia 91, ma in Spagna.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Alternative Media. I am your host, Patrick Slattery, live. We are live. I hope everybody enjoyed the taped interview, but now we are here live. We're being joined. Attorney Don Advo is supposed to be with us. I believe he's with us. And we also have Richard Sloan joining us as well. So, gentlemen, are you there?
Richard Sloan is here.
Richard Sloan. Okay. And Don Advo, are you here? He will be joining us momentarily. He might be having a little bit of microphone problems.
While we're waiting, Dr. Slattery, I'm interested in how one can catch the archives of these shows if we miss them live. Is there a way to go online and get the archives?
Yeah. The way that you can get them right now is through my YouTube channel, which is Patrick Slattery. Well, look up Patrick Slattery. I think it's Patrick Slattery 1957, I believe is the formal name of it. But if you Google, or if you go onto YouTube and you look for Patrick Slattery, the Alternative Media, you'll find all the shows, except last week's shows haven't gotten up yet. Now, RBN has, they have an archiving function, but I'm the substitute host. I'm not sure if you're going to be finding the archives there yet, but you can find them through the YouTube channel. And I'll be getting last week's show up within the next couple days, and this one as well.
That's great. I understand that Don Advo is with us now.
Don, yes, I am. I am here.
Okay, great. And Don, did you hear any of the Kevin McDonald interview?
Yes, I did. I heard the last hour.
All right. What did you think?
Well, very good. Very insightful. I think he's right. I agree with him. I think he's a little understated on the fact that they're doing all this stuff consciously and premeditatedly.
Understated.
I think that, hell yes, they're hell yes, and, they're being, you know,
that then that this is a conscious effort to
of course it is. Isn't it a conscious effort to silence us and squeeze us?
Certainly
out?
Is.
I
certainly
mean, it's not
it's a conscious effort to
you know,
try to
speak out against these people. You lose your job, and you have all other kinds of problems.
That's right. Or you get shut down. You they try to take away whatever platform you have. That's right. So, and then, of course, Professor Sloan, I'm not sure how much of the interview you heard, but one of the last questions I asked was, so David Duke thinks this effort, by the Zionists as a group to silence us and to replace us, but also I had asked Professor McDonald about whether he thought it was a conscious effort to also dilute or add static or degrade the European gene pool through various admixtures with non-European groups, to if nothing else, add static, make it less homogeneous, introduce a lot of traits that are less common in the European gene pool. And he seemed to think about it for a second and then answered yes. And so that's the situation we're facing. Now, I know a lot of people who really would not care about the having a multicultural society if it was going to be the multicultural society that was being advertised, the happy one. But of course, what's the reality is that the United States as a proposition nation, that proposition seems to be hatred of white people, grievances against white people. And so I think even a lot of people who wouldn't mind, multiculturalism per se, are going to be very susceptible to arguments that, well, yeah, what about this multiculturalism, where the multiculturalism is aimed against, specifically against whites. What do you all think about that? Because, I mean, I'm just saying this is something that could go beyond your traditional white nationalists. A lot of people from different parts of the political spectrum with different backgrounds could agree with some of those statements, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think so.
Professor Sloan, you there?
I would agree with that, yes.
Yeah. Another, Don Advo and I were talking last night, and we were talking about we have long-term goals, but there's also short-term priorities. And sometimes to get your short-term priorities, for instance, a short-term priority would be to get Donald Trump elected, because that's going to open up a variety of avenues, a variety of possibilities. And to get this short-term priority, you have to be able to make coalitions sometimes with people who might not share all of your long-term goals. And then that winds up also shaping the narrative that you use, at least in certain, one venue. Some venues you're not going to want to necessarily talk about all the long-term goals, because people are going to have different long-term goals. Any two thinking people are going to have certain differences, and but if you're going to be working together, sometimes you just have to concentrate at the issue at hand. So I'm throwing that out there for discussion.
Well, yeah, we do need long-term goals, and yeah, we do need short-term priorities. There's no doubt about that. I think the Trump candidacy has been the most extraordinary thing in my lifetime. Certainly since I became aware of all of this in or about the year 2000, and I think it's really opened a lot of doors for us. Everybody seems to agree with that. Trump isn't talking explicitly about racial conflict, but he is empowering people to go in that direction and to resist and to organize and fight. That's really encouraging. I think more and more our people are going to be amenable to our message. It's just that simple. They're starting to kind of to flow that way, kind of like toothpaste or something,
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I see it. I've talked about this so many times. You see it in the comments sections on the internet. When people are allowed to speak freely, they do speak freely, and they are on our side. It's just, it's astonishing to me, and I think we owe Trump a lot. I don't see, there's this paranoid wing who thinks that everything is fixed and rigged and the whole system is rigged and Trump is this whole thing with Trump is some kind of conspiracy to try to get him into office so he can do whatever the Jews want. Well, on the Republican side of it, they already had, a dozen candidates who were willing to do that. Does anybody believe Jeb Bush would not have served the interests of the Zionist Jews that run this country? And does anybody believe that Jeb Bush was a willing participant in some kind of conspiracy or some kind of grand design that caused him to be chased off the national political scene in a manner that left him totally humiliated? He can hardly show his face anywhere. It's like, you look at the guy and the whole Bush family is kind of a sour note there. You can see the hatred and the resentment of Bush Sr., notwithstanding that he's, in his 90s now. He is not happy about what has been done to his family. He had high hopes that Jeb Bush would be the third Bush presidency. in a very short period of time. So that those hopes are dashed. I don't think we're going to see the Bush family really ever come back in the way that it was. I don't believe that.
You know, I think everybody was expecting, say, a year ago at this time, everybody was expecting just another election with a Tweedledee and a Tweedledum, and maybe the option of trying to vote for the lesser of two evils. There was no reason that there needed to be somebody like Donald Trump, you know, some new kind of shill to be put in, you know, if according to this narrative that Donald Trump is just another shill, just another pawn who's manipulated by Jewish interests. There was no reason for it. Everybody was expecting, you know, Bush versus Clinton.
The election was already rigged in their favor. You know, it was already rigged. There was no reason for them to bring him in as a wild card. And I think he may have succeeded in doing something that George Lincoln Rockwell said was not possible. He said you can't sneak up on the Jews by pretending you don't know you're there, they're there, and you're going to get into power and then turn on them. I think Trump may have done that. I don't think anybody saw his success. He was a celebrity, and they thought he would hit the scene, and they gave him a lot of media time because it was good for ratings, and he, in a certain sense, was one of them. But, you know, he's broken free. He lit the fuse to an insurrection, and he is riding the crest of that insurrection. And that insurrection can turn on him just as easily as it turned against the establishment. Mm-hmm. And I have to say, the establishment, the measure of hysteria by these Jews, there's a personal dimension to it. There's a hysteria, there's a fear. You can hear it in the high-pitched squeal of their voices. Specifically, listen to Ben Shapiro go off on this. Listen to Mark Levin. There are times when he sounds like he's nuts. And this guy Reiner, Rob Reiner, you know, he used to play I forget what show it was, and he said, "Oh, they're racist. They're all racists." And it's like a hysteria in the pitch of his voice. I was very surprised by that.
Yeah, he was on the Colbert Show a few nights ago bragging about having, as a 15-year-old, groped Mary Tyler Moore, much to her chagrin.
Show. That's something about which one would really feel chagrin. How did he ever get access to her? I didn't realize.
His father was the writer and producer of the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Carl Reiner, and I think Rob Reiner grew up in a very sort of insular world. He was surrounded by a lot of Hollywood talent all his life, and he sort of doesn't. I think I know the show that Don Edva was talking about. I think he was on Morning Joe. And the reason he went all shrill is he was just sort of shocked that people had a different view of Donald Trump. He just he can't believe that Donald Trump is popular, because it's so contrary to his you know, the circles that he operates in.
Well, you know, a few days ago, Amy Goodman, who was a left-wing Jewish journalist who has a show called Democracy Now!, which, you know, could be interesting 10 or 15 years ago, you know, when you had the war in Iraq, the invasion of Iraq, there was a lot of interesting news that was coming out from her show that wasn't coming out from network shows. But she predictably is freaking out about Donald Trump. But she played a clip from the head of CBS News, whose name is something Moonies. He's a Jewish individual. Moonves. And he is the head of CBS. And he was talking about how much money that they're making off of Donald Trump just because of ratings. Not, you know, just because of ratings, just because the politics has become such a spectacle. This election's become a spectacle the way the World Series or the March Madness basketball has become such a spectacle that they're making money hand over foot. And, of course, Donald Trump had, when he bowed out of the Fox-sponsored Republican debate last autumn that Megyn Kelly was going to be at, you know, he was pointing out how much money Fox would lose by him not being there. And this was all verified. Now, the it's interesting because on the one hand, you have all these people, Mark Levin or Rob Reiner that you mentioned, Don, who are completely freaking out. On the other hand, the media has been giving him massive coverage. The Zio media has been giving him a huge amount of coverage. And is it because, I mean, are the people who run CBS, they have their tribal interests, but at the same time, they're out to make money. And how much of this desire to cash in on the spectacle of Trump?
If I could offer a quick opinion. Hello.
I'm here.
Okay. Dr. Slattery was asking how much of the spectacle of Trump, how much of the attention that the media is giving Trump is because the media just wants to make money. And I think money, you know, profit is a large part of it. But I think also there is the possibility that when the media gives Trump a lot of attention, they've always been hoping that they were giving him rope to sort of hang himself. Mm-hmm. You know, Trump would say something like, you know, let's build a wall on the southern border. And I think there were a lot of people in the media that thought, ah, that's it. That's the end of Trump. Let's just put this quote out and, you know, everybody's going to, you know, see what a clown he is, because that's what we, speaking as you know, the media people, thought. And then they would give a lot of publicity to some comment Trump made that they just thought was indefensible and awful, and they'd find out, oh, the American people agreed. And I think that's led into, you know, the freakout that we're talking about now.
I think you're right. I think it's a combination of two things, at least two things. One is, as you have just said, Professor Sloan, is they misread the public mood. They misread the public sentiment. They did not sense the anger. And I think there's a reason for that. And I think that reason ties into why they have given him, perhaps unwittingly or perhaps wittingly, so much coverage. I think they have been in control for so long. There is a certain measure of complacency. I think, in a certain sense, with the Trump phenomenon, they are victims of their own sense of infallibility. I think they believe it's pretty much the conquest of America and the ultimate breeding out, the ultimate dispossession and ethnic cleansing of the goyim. I believe they think they're 90% of the way there. And it's all over but the shouting. And I think they became complacent. I think they became victims of their own sense of they believe the game is over and the game has a long way to go, in point of fact.
They're running their victory lap a little bit too early.
I think that's true.
So a combination partly of cashing in on the Trump phenomenon, but also thinking that in giving him this media attention, that the attention, the scrutiny was going to destroy Trump, and it just didn't, because people don't care about Trump University, or people don't care if he called Rosie O'Donnell a fat pig. They just don't care, because there's a lot of things they're really angry about, and these little things that might have worked 4 years ago or 8 years ago aren't going to work. That seems to be it.
Hollywood is also very out of touch with sort of middle America. What Hollywood thinks is damning, what Hollywood thinks will get people on sort of the anti-Trump train, actually gets people to support Trump. Wasn't there an example a couple of weeks ago when the Hillary camp put out an anti-Trump ad, and a lot of people looked at it and thought, oh, that's why I like Trump? It was several cuts of different comments that Trump had made, and a lot of middle America, they see that and, oh yeah, that's what I like about the guy.
Yeah. Well, clearly they've miscalculated, and it's interesting. Of course, the game's not over yet, and you know, we're now facing his Veep stakes. He's got to decide on a vice presidential candidate. And that's going to be very interesting. About half an hour ago, Saturday Night Live was doing a skit on this. I was able to see it because our last half hour had pre-taped. I looked at their, and they've got, you know, they're making fun of a lot of things. But, of course, there was also this past week the big, trolling episode of the David Duke meme, the Trump Duke meme, which we'll see. You know, that got a lot of play in the New York Times and elsewhere. Trump, David Duke being Trump's best life insurance policy. You know, of course, it's not a serious proposition, but even trying to smear, you know, the David Duke, the KKK thing on Trump, nobody seems to even care about that anymore.
Yeah, that's a very interesting thing that happened. There's a guy named Hugh Hewitt, a neocon. He's a goyim, but he's married to a Jewish woman, and he's a very smart guy. He's a lawyer, been on talk radio a long time. Interesting guy, does a lot of really interesting interviews with people. But he's seething in his hatred of Trump, and he tries to pretend that he's being neutral about it, but he's really not. He really hates Trump. But in any event, if you go to his website and click on YouTube, Hugh Hewitt, you know, it's just one show after another over the last 6 months where he has predicted the imminent demise of Donald Trump, and he has said it is mathematically impossible for him to reach 1,237 delegates. The math doesn't lie. And as recently as about a month ago, he had Carly Fiorina on to talk about why Trump was such a loser and he wasn't going to make it, and he had Cruz on several times. And he talked about the David Duke thing. He says, David Duke, when Trump was equivocal about denouncing and disavowing David Duke, he lost the election. He says, because they'll simply play that in the minority communities and they'll never vote for Donald Trump. And nobody, and it's just amazing to me, you know, nobody cares about that. Nobody cares.
Okay, well, I'm hearing our unpredictable bumper music. We will be back after the break. Okay, and welcome back to the alternative media. And I'm your host, Patrick Slattery. We are back, I believe, and we're here with Professor Richard Sloan and Attorney Don Advo. Are you back, Don?
I'm back. I'm here loud and clear, I hope.
Okay. So with the and we are taking callers at 1-800-313-9443 if you want to call with a question or a comment. But regarding the Veep stakes, this is something I'm basically resigned to the proposition that he's likely going to select a vice presidential candidate who is not somebody I'm going to be thrilled with. He's not going to pick David Duke. Is there anybody out there he might be able to pick that's just not going to that is not going to be a magnet for an assassination, for one thing?
Good question. I'm really worried about that, and I don't know who he could pick unless it would be Jeff Sessions. Jeff Sessions is as hard on immigration as Trump is, and I don't think they would want to see Jeff Sessions in the White House. I think Sessions would come down pretty hard on Hillary if she doesn't get pardoned by Obama. I believe Obama will pardon Hillary before he leaves office.
Do you know anything about Jeff Sessions' foreign policy?
Not really. I don't think he's very, you know, very Zionist. He wants to because that would be completely inconsistent with the immigration policy that he's taking. I can't see somebody being big on wars for Israel and at the same time a supporter of the wall and a supporter of American nationalism. You know, American first foreign policy and, you know, nationalism, preserving American sovereignty kind of seem to go hand in glove. That's kind of the way I see it. But you know, who knows what's going on behind closed doors? It's impossible to know. I was a little interesting about the meeting with Paul Ryan. There was some talk about that, and the Republican mainstream said that Ryan was caving in Trump's direction. And there were a number, if you go to Breitbart, they were talking about 9 congressional chairman people occupying congressional chairmanships in the House have endorsed Trump. So there is a tidal wave kind of bubbling up from the bottom. And it's as seen in the House of Representatives, which is closer to the people. Now, I've seen some polling data. There's a primary challenger to Ryan in his district in Wisconsin. I forget the guy's name, Nair or Nearer or something like that. And supposedly he is doing well in the polls. Mm-hmm. Supposedly Ryan has very, very seriously alienated people in his district and they're really sick of him. Now, who knows what's really going to happen? But if he goes the way of Eric Cantor, I mean, I remember that. That sent shockwaves.
And that was over the immigration issue.
That was over the immigration issue. And Jeff Sessions was on the Mark Levin show. And Jeff Sessions said that turned the tide against amnesty in the House of Representatives. That completely turned the tide. These House people are very, very sensitive to the will of the rank and file. They stand for election every 2 years. So they're very sensitive to that. And that's what I think would really be astonishing. If there is a primary and Ryan is knocked out in the primary, mm-hmm. Holy mackerel, Andy, that is huge. That is huge.
And of course, the only reason Ryan is the speaker is because Cantor had been knocked out. Cantor had been groomed to be the speaker. Cantor would be the speaker. We would have a Jewish speaker of the House now, had it not been for him losing his primary bid. What was that? 2014.
Yeah, two years ago. Yeah.
Okay, we have a caller, Mike in Kentucky. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, you kind of stirred up several things that I would have liked to talk about, but just a couple of things is, what do you think are, you know, you talked about a lot of the white European issues, but it seems, looking back, there's a lot of, and there comes the break.
Yeah, here comes the break. We will be back with Mike in Kentucky after the break.
Well, everybody's heard about the bird.
Welcome back to the Alternative Media, and we have Mike in Kentucky. Mike, what was on your mind?
You know, you were talking about a lot of the issues with the, you know, the European and German immigration and that kind of stuff. Just as a side note, I think there's a lot of white folks, you can be found pockets of them elsewhere, like some of the very photogenic and I think the Western media has somewhat picked up on it, the photogenic green-eyed, pale Kurdish women warriors. You know, if there were some refugees that I'd like to take in, I tell you what, we could take in a few of those to get them out of their situation there. But nobody seems to like those Kurds, and I have to wonder, you know, if part of that is because there's a lot of very Caucasian looking folks in there. And the Bible itself talks about you know, several places, like in the Song of Solomon or different places, the word fair mm-hmm. is used to describe beauty. But if you look that up, fair also can mean pale or white. And a buddy of mine was telling me about reading about finding Egyptian mummies that were redheaded and mummified Caucasian type mummies. So I don't think that, you know, quote, white people history is just limited to Europe. You know, when you look at that, a Kennewick man, which turned out to be a woman, predates even the Vikings coming to North America was found out, I think, in Oregon
in Washington State.
And that the Native Americans are trying to claim it, even though there's no genetic evidence that it was of their tribes out there.
Well, yeah, the forensic evidence certainly did not link it to the Indians. There's some initial genetic reports that I'm seeing that seem to, but I don't think it's conclusive yet. It's interesting what you're saying. The European people, most of the European people are descended from this tribe about 4,000 or 5,000 years ago from Central Asia called the Indo-Europeans. And, you know, a lot of them moved into Europe. Some of them moved down to India, and they were the Aryan people who moved the Indian subcontinent that was populated by a different race, which is usually called the Dravidians, dark-skinned people who, and what you have in India now is a mixture, but in the north of India, it's a mixture that's predominantly Aryan, and so they're lighter skinned, and the south, they're predominantly Dravidian. But you mentioned the Kurds, and the Kurds are also Indo-European. Now, the Semitic people, the Arabs and the Jews, they are not Indo-European, and the Turks are not Indo-European. So, but the Kurds are. They speak an Indo-European language, which is related to the European languages. And you mentioned you see a lot of green eyes among them. So, they are Muslim, but
some of them are Muslim, but they have another religion that is not Muslim. They're Abrahamic monotheistic religion. I can't remember the name of it right now, but they believe in one God, but they're not Muslim or Jewish. And it does seem to me that there is a concerted, coordinated, deliberate attack on Christianity, even to the point of contradicting the New Testament and they're chipping away at things like John the Baptist being Elijah, crying from the wilderness, make straight the way of the Lord. So they're attacking everything about the culture of the last 500 years, basically, that has to do with white people accepting the gospel. Even that, because in order for them to establish Judaism or some sort of a council of wise secular rulers that would rule from Jerusalem, they have to first get rid of any other thing that's in the way. And I think the American history is in the way of. I heard a preacher say that Israel does not need America. America needs Israel recently.
It needs Israel like a hole in the head. That's right.
Oh my gosh! It's a heck of a ball and chain on America right now, dragging our foreign policy around like I don't know what. But when you step back and look at it, and don't look at it from some kind of a Zionist rose-colored glasses, you can see it, but I think most of the people are blinded to it because they're so afraid of that curse. You know, I will bless those who bless you and curse those who curse you. It's been drilled into American culture for, I don't know, 80 years or something. So,
yeah, so. I think you're right. Hey, thanks for your call, Mike.
All right, bye-bye.
It's good hearing from you. Okay. Professor Sloan, you had a line of thought you were going to bring up.
Last time when we were talking on this show, or possibly it was the time before last, I think it was last time when we were talking about, I made the point that it would be wonderful if people would go back to the source. When they hear Trump said so-and-so, or when they read in the newspaper, Trump said so-and-so, they're often reading, most of the article is usually what the the spin that the journalist is putting on the Trump quote and what the journalist is telling you it means, and a lot less of it is what the alleged source actually said. So it would be wonderful if we lived in a world where people would go back to the source more and be wary of the deliverer of the source, who often filters it through his or her own value system. And following from that, you and I were talking about people like to have experts. People are fans of a certain show or fans of a certain columnist, and they like to think that, oh, you know, this person that I respect supports my candidate, or this person that I respect thinks in this way. They sort of like to, you know, it's I guess it's a natural sort of biological instinct.
Experts are talking about, none of them support Trump.
Yeah, sorry, I took a little while to get there, but that's where I was leading, is people often wonder, well, who is it that says, who supports Trump? Can you name any expert in academia or in business or in politics? Or can you name somebody that I believe in that supports Trump? And as you say, I think it's a false litmus test. We could maybe throw out a few names, but right away we'd get pounced on, and people would say, well, you know, he's, you know, what are his credentials or what are her credentials? And there's all these other people that are against Trump. But as Don Advo said a few minutes ago, this is sort of like a from the ground up movement. And you've seen that other times in history, where you're not necessarily tossed into the gulag by coming out and saying that you support this idea or you support this person, but it's not profitable to do so. And so I think it's sort of like a self-fulfilling prophecy, is the people that the system has deemed the experts are not the sort of people that want to call themselves Trump supporters, because you're disadvantaged by coming out and being a Trump supporter. It's almost a endorsement for Trump that the quote-unquote experts don't want to come out and support him, because there's that stigma attached. Well, doesn't that mean that the system fears this guy?
Mm-hmm. Don, you know, there's federal election commission regulations, or maybe federal communication commission regulations, on giving fair time or equal time to candidates, which maybe can be skirted to some extent during the primaries when there's so many candidates. But when you have the two major party candidates, are the networks going to be able to continue getting away with having panels of seven anti-Trump people and one pro-Trump person?
Yeah, sure they will. The fairness doctrine doesn't apply to non-candidates. I'm not sure the fairness doctrine even applies at all anymore. The Democrats are trying to bring it back, but I don't know. The short answer is I don't know. The Senate has sent a letter to Facebook to explain. The Senate Commerce Committee, one of the senators on there from North Dakota or South Dakota, explaining how they did their thing with the arrangement of news. And I don't understand how they can even do that.
Trending.
Because, because you know, how they report the news is their own business. They can't send a letter to the Times, Los Angeles Times.
I think
we don't like the way you're reporting the news.
It's I think the issue is that Facebook says this is trending, and there is a understanding among the readers that by trending it means something specific, that this is what people are clicking on, this is what people are reposting.
Well, they also have accounts too.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the newspaper and Fox News don't have accounts. You know, they don't have participation by the audience. So, I guess that maybe there's some angle there that I don't see.
I think the angle is that they are manipulating it to make it seem as that certain stories are trending when they're by a particular criteria, when they're really not.
I think that's the way it came out, but that's just misreporting the news. There's never been any accountability for that. They've been doing that for 100 years, misreporting the news. I just don't know on the Facebook thing. But to answer your question, are the networks going to be able to have all these panels with anti-Trump people? The answer is yes. Nobody's going to stop them.
Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure what the regulations are, but there's always been kind of the assumption that, you know, if you're going to have the debate or if you're going to have a panel, you're going to have more or less an equal number of people. And in the primaries, when there was, if you had 8 or 10 candidates who were actively running, to have only one person who was pro-Trump didn't seem like a big deal. But in a general election, if they continue to have these panels that seem so lopsided, whether or not it's violating any regulations, it would seem to be a departure. I mean, if it was Bush and Gore or McCain and Obama, they would at least, I mean, they try to maintain this pretense of fairness and objectivity. And are they just going to toss the pretense out the window?
Well, I think the pretense is largely a fraud. I don't think anybody believes it. I watch the comments on the internet about Fox, and people are as angry at Fox News as they are at Obama for the smearing of Donald Trump and that whole thing they went through with Megyn Kelly. There's really a grassroots rebellion, and it's not just a political thing. It's cultural. It's in the media. I mean, I'm looking at Breitbart, and there's a story on there about how they have a United States senator named Ben Sasse, who has indicated a willingness to be involved in the Never Trump movement and to support a third-party a movement against Trump. And Sasse is a neocon. He's come out very strongly against Trump and taking the moral high ground and all that baloney. And turns out there's the Nebraska state Republicans had a convention, and they said they're voting not to support any Republican office holder who opposes the GOP presidential nominee or advocates a third party candidate. He's getting his feet held to the fire by his own people back home, his own constituents. They're not buying off on this stuff anymore. People mm-hmm. are mad. They have been lied to and screwed over for so many years. They don't want to hear the crap anymore. They just don't want to hear it, and I understand that.
So I was about to say, and it seems to back up what you were just saying, that in past years, you would have found a pretty large majority of people who would either buy into one or the other of the prepackaged narratives, the liberal one or the conservative one. And if you had man on the street interview, you know, they would spout one or two of the talking points that of the two major parties. And it seems to me, and it seems that you were saying, that people are mad and they're just not going to buy into it. If they have this neocon Republican prepackaged talk, is that what it boils down to?
Okay, we're sick of people who have armed bodyguards telling us that guns can't protect you. We're sick of people who live in walled off communities telling us that walls don't work. We're just sick of being bullshitted and lied to. It's not any more complicated than that, you know. And here comes a guy that really just comes right out and says the truth. Build a wall, keep Muslims out of the country, and start kicking Mexicans out. It's not really that much more complicated than that. And put tariffs on imports so we have jobs here at home.
I mean, it's nothing new that we've been lied to. What's new is that it seems larger numbers are so angry.
People are so damn mad. And you know, Trump has exposed the kosher conservative cabal for what it really is. People see that. And I hear people calling into talk radio shows, Michael Medved, Mark Levin, saying, look, you know, Michael Medved, you've been on this for months now, attacking Trump, and you've been wrong every time. Either, you know, come on board or get run over by the train, you know?
Now, is it just that Donald Trump has tapped into this anger, or is there kind of a feedback loop going on that he's tapped into some, but then he's also enlightening people or creating
both? It's creating, both.
So it's this feedback loop.
Both. Hell, look, when you think you're alone and you're the only pissed off white person in the world, and you go to a rally and there's 34,999 other people there just like you, that's a hell of a thing. I went to the David Duke conference in 2005 in New Orleans. Just to be in a room with 300 or 400 people who thought the way I did was exhilarating and energizing. I can imagine what it must be like to go to a rally where there's 10,000 people or 20,000 people. Read Kevin McDonald's description of the rally, the Trump rally he attended in Oregon. It's like a volcano is gone off, and they're not going to be able to stop it. All this crap about how Trump is a Jewish shill and the Jews are blah blah this and blah blah that. Look, there is raw natural energy, raw natural power. They're not going to be able to put that genie back in the bottle. Not to
okay.
Stop.
All right. Well, we have one more segment coming up after the break, and we'll be back with more of the alternative media. Welcome back to the show. So, you know, last autumn, they were saying Donald Trump, he could only pull in 25 or 30%. At 30%, he'd max out. And then he's been getting higher and higher, but he was still trailing behind Hillary, double digits. And now he's pulling up even with Hillary. How much farther is this going? Where is this phenomenon going, Professor Sloan?
Well, I don't know. I was just talking to you in the break about how it sort of reminds one of rock and roll in the very beginnings, where rock and roll had these enemies that just couldn't understand it. And you know the line, like it's like trying to tell a stranger about rock and roll. Sometimes I try to explain to people the phenomenon that leads middle America to sort of support Donald Trump, and they just can't get it. If it's somebody that's tied into the media or somebody who's high up in academia, they just sort of live in a different world, and they don't see that, you know, like that there's something in the ether. And if I had to say it in one sentence, I would say it's time to fix America first. Is, you know, like once upon a time there were the beatniks and there were the hippies. There are these fixies now. There are these people that want to fix America first, and Trump is sort of the, you know, the first Elvis Presley or whatever that makes that music that the sort of masses want to hear. But there's this rejection of it, or there's this strong resistance to it by people of authority now. And so I was just making the point that it sort of reminds me of the beginnings of rock and roll, mm-hmm. where there were so many people that hated it and couldn't understand it. And they would look at these, you know, teenagers jumping and wiggling and they'd listen to this sound and it didn't sound like music to them. But it's what the world wants, and it's something that's in the air right now. Mm-hmm. And I think that Donald Trump is making that music. He's speaking that language.
He's Elvis. Any closing thoughts, Don?
Yeah, I agree with everything Professor Sloan just said.
Okay, great. Hey, thank you both for being with us today. I want to just remind people, I have a new website, ziowatch.com, zio-watch.com. Take a look at it. There's going to be another website coming out soon, but the Zio Watch, this is all the news about you know, Zionism, Jewish supremacy, the news from the Zionist sources themselves. It's from the horse's mouth, from the kosher horse's mouth, but also from other sites as well. Okay, well, it's been another great show, and I hope you guys can come back again soon. Farron will be back within a few more weeks, but we're going to enjoy this show while we can. All right.
Here, here.
Yes, we are.
All right. Well, we're enjoying it. let's have a nice rousing song to play us out with, Mr. Engineer. Pick one. Anyone. We have about 10 seconds left in the show. I might have jumped the gun a little bit on this. And in the last couple of seconds, remember RBN too. It's good to donate to RBN. This is a alternative media source that is helping with this revolution that we're bringing to America to make America great again. RBN is helping to make America great again as well.
Thank you, Dr. Slattery.
Thank you. Okay. There we go. The Tiger Rag. And remember, Tiger Rag, Rags the Tiger, Crusader Rabbit, great old cartoon. So we'll be back in...